Welcome to the debate. So imagine you are standing in front of a pretty complex control panel.
Right, like a massive dashboard.
Exactly. Maybe it's the diagnostic monitor in an intensive care unit, or, you know, the central command of a national power grid, or even the dashboard of a global economy. And suddenly, a red light flashes.
Always a stressful moment.
Absolutely. A critical variable, like blood pressure, or grid frequency, or GDP, is just dropping fast. And the instinct, I mean, the very foundation of applied science, is to reach out, adjust a lever, and force that metric back into the green.
Right. You give the drug, or you flip the breaker.
Yeah. Or you slash interest rates. And then the light stops flashing. But here is the critical question we are wrestling with today. Did you just save the system? Or did you simply paint over the alarm while silently accelerating the system's ultimate collapse?
And that is precisely the tension at the heart of our discussion. It's really a question of whether our interventions are actually healing systems or just, you know, hiding their fractures.
Exactly. In complex, high-stakes environments, does directly intervening to control measurable variables stabilize the system, or does it breed hidden fragility? This entire debate emerges from a fascinating new book published today, April 2, 2026.
Oh, yes. From Structure to Practice, Diagnosing and Navigating Viability in the Real World.
Right. By Dr. Bishara Salee. And I'll be taking the position that targeted, variable-based control acting directly on a system's current state is a necessary, pragmatic, and honestly highly effective method for stabilizing systems in the real world.
Well, and I will be arguing the counter perspective. I genuinely believe direct control of variables is a dangerous illusion. When we force variables, we actively destroy a system's relational coherence. I'll be making the case that true viability can only be sustained through what the book calls indirect navigation, rather than brute force control.
To start us off, I really want to ground my perspective in the messy reality of crisis management. State-based measurement and intervention aren't just academic theories. I mean, they're the absolute bedrock of how we keep things alive.
Okay, but at what cost to the long-term health?
Well, let's look at the clinical examples in the text. Imagine a patient in septic shock. Their blood pressure experiences a completely life-threatening drop. Or consider a city's wastewater treatment plant facing a massive, sudden increase in influent load during a huge storm.
Sure. Those are highly acute scenarios.
Right. And in those moments, directly intervening to correct the failing variable is vital. You administer a vasopressor medication to literally constrict the patient's blood vessels, or you manually override the pumps at the plant. These actions prevent immediate, catastrophic failure.
I hear you, but...
Just to finish the thought, the book outlines 7 underlying primitives of viability. But I maintain that state, which is the current measurable condition, and regulation, our direct response to it, are the most tangible, reliable levers we actually have. Sometimes forcing a system back into bounds is just the reality of keeping it alive.
The problem with that approach, though, is that you're treating the variable as if it is the system itself. I completely reject the premise that manipulating a number on a screen constitutes true stabilization.
You don't think normalizing a patient's blood pressure is stabilizing them?
Not necessarily. The text uses this brilliant analogy of a bridge. A bridge is not actually held up by its steel girders. It's held up by its invisible pattern of structural tension. The steel is just the medium.
Okay, structural tension. But the steel matters.
Of course it matters, but when we force a variable, like artificially spiking that blood pressure or capping economic prices, we are essentially painting over rusting steel while completely ignoring the collapsing structural tension underneath.
Hmm.
The text argues that these forced interventions consume what is called the system's margin. That's its buffering capacity, its emergency savings. You create massive hidden fragility. And that's why I argue we have to abandon direct control for navigation. Navigation means working with the system's constraints and preserving its margin, without dictating the exact outcome. It is really the only evidence-based path to long-term survival.
Wait, let me push back on that bridge analogy right away, because I think it exposes the main flaw in the navigation approach. If I am standing on that bridge in a Category 5 hurricane and a steel beam snaps,
yeah,
I do not have the time, or frankly the luxury, to map out the invisible pattern of relational tension. I need to weld the steel. I need to bolt it back together right then and there to stop the bridge from falling into the river.
That's a very reactive way of looking at it, though.
Maybe, but in medicine or economics, aren't vital signs and GDP exactly the data points we need to trigger immediate survival protocols? I mean, tracking the state of the system seems to be the most objective way to know if the bridge is falling.
But think about what actually happens when you do that. What happens when you weld rigid, unyielding steel onto a bridge that is fundamentally designed to sway in the hurricane winds?
Will you reinforce it?
No, you create a stress fracture. The bridge might hold for 10 minutes, but when the next gust of wind hits, the rigid weld doesn't bend, and the entire structure shatters. You've locked it into a state of fragility.
I see the point you're making, but...
The variable you're tracking, the broken beam, the dropping blood pressure, is just a shadow on the wall. It's a lagging indicator. By the time that number drops, the system has already been failing for a long time.
But how can it be failing if the variable has been perfectly stable up until that exact point? Like, if the blood pressure is normal, the body's functioning.
Functioning, yes, but not viable. There is a massive difference there. To keep that blood pressure stable during the early stages of an infection, the body has been compensating. And to compensate, it has been burning through its margin, its reserves.
Okay, so it's working overtime.
Exactly. And the text outlines four specific observable signals of emerging failure that happen way before the variables ever drift.
You're talking about the relational breakdowns.
Exactly. First, you have path dependence. Suddenly, the same input produces a completely different outcome. Then, cross-channel divergence.
Which is when different parts of the system start pulling apart, right?
Right. They behave inconsistently. Third, you get increasing variability. The dashboard starts flickering, so to speak. And finally, delayed recovery. The system takes much longer to bounce back from a minor shock.
Okay, I recognize those warning signs.
These are the structural tensions snapping. If a clinician or an economist waits for the actual GDP or the vital signs to drop before triggering your survival protocols, the global breakdown has already begun. The steel didn't just snap in the hurricane. The integrity of the bridge was compromised weeks ago, and you just missed it because you were only looking at the paint.
Okay, I hear what you're saying about lagging indicators. That is a fair critique. But let's follow the logic of the text's alternative. The book proposes navigation.
Yes, navigation.
Preserving margin.
Right, preserving margin. Supporting intrinsic regulations, reducing external pressures. If I'm looking at a coral reef experiencing a massive bleaching event or an economy entering a sudden terrifying death spiral.
Mm-hmm. Reducing external pressure sounds dangerously close to passive observation. If a patient is actively bleeding out, improving perception doesn't stop the bleeding.
Well, obviously you stop a literal hemorrhage.
But sometimes precision and mapping take too much time, and you need the heavy hand of a central bank intervention or the heavy hand of a critical care drug. You just have to take control.
But that heavy hand is exactly what triggers what Dr. Saiheli calls the paradox of control and the escalation trap. Let's walk through the mechanics of this because it's crucial.
Sure, let's go through it.
When you force a system, you don't actually resolve the crisis. You just amplify the system's hidden incompatibilities. Let's use the macroeconomic example from the text. Say prices for a crucial commodity, like bread, are skyrocketing due to a supply-demand imbalance.
Right. A classic inflation crisis.
Yeah. The intuitive, control-based response, your heavy hand, is to step in and cap the prices. You force the variable back into the green.
Right. And the immediate hyperinflation is halted. People can afford to eat today. I mean, that is a tangible, necessary stabilization. You can't just let people starve while you navigate.
But look at how it stabilizes and what it costs. The visible variable is controlled, sure, but what happens to the relational structure? Because the price is artificially low, suppliers stop producing bread because they can't cover their own costs.
So supply plummets.
Supply plummets. Black markets immediately emerge. Now the central bank or the government has to police the black market. So they intervene again, imposing harsher penalties, which requires more resources.
Ah, the escalation trap.
This is the escalation trap. Your initial intervention caused a new, more complex problem. So you intervene again, adding more complexity, overriding more of the system's internal regulation, until the system has zero autonomy left. You have totally stripped away all its margin.
So you're arguing that forcing the dial masks the real problem while secretly hollowing out the foundation of the whole economy?
Precisely. The system's adaptive options narrow to basically zero. The next time a minor shock hits, say a slight delay in grain shipments, the entire economy collapses because there's no buffer left.
Wow.
Navigation is not passivity. It's incredibly active. It's the discipline of refusing to consume the system's margin. It means strengthening the buffers, improving information flow, and respecting the constraints rather than forcing a localized outcome that fractures the global whole.
Okay, let's unpack that idea of fracturing the global whole. Because to fully grasp your argument, we need to look at the mathematical and relational architecture the text relies on.
The triads.
Yes, the triads. The book argues that systems process everything through functional triads. It maps the seven primitives into these overlapping triads, claiming that triadic closure is absolutely mandatory for a system to be viable.
Yes, that is a total cornerstone of the framework. A simple pair of interactions is never, ever enough to sustain a system.
And honestly, that is where I struggle with the text. Why overcomplicate it? Why demand this rigid triadic structure? The text argues against simple pairwise interactions, like A leading directly to B.
Because A to B doesn't work in isolation.
But in the real world, pairwise causal interactions are incredibly common and seem entirely sufficient for regulation. Think about a standard thermostat. A temperature sensor directly triggers a furnace.
Okay.
The sensor gets cold, the furnace turns on. That's A to B. It's a direct, local, pairwise interaction, and it works perfectly in millions of homes. Why do we need to invent a mandatory third element for internal validation?
Because you are taking the third element for granted. The thermostat isn't just a sensor and a furnace.
It functionally is, though.
No. If you only have a sensor detecting cold and a furnace generating heat, just A and B, what actually happens? The furnace turns on and it never stops. The house heats up to 120 degrees until the furnace burns itself out or the house catches fire. A pair without context cannot validate itself.
The target temperature setting.
Exactly. The constraint. The target range, say 70 degrees, is the third element. Without that constraint, the pair has no context. It will either oscillate wildly or self-destruct. It needs that internal validation. A relates to B given C.
Right, A to B given C.
The triad, sensor, furnace, and constraint, is the absolute minimum viable structure for regulation.
Okay, fair enough. I concede the thermostat example, the target range grounds the action. But how does this mathematical insistence on triads translate into the danger of intervening in a complex system, like an ICU patient or an economy?
It translates through sequence. In a complex, overlapping system of triads, the order in which these interactions occur fundamentally dictates whether the system lives or dies. The text uses a wonderfully simple analogy for this. Putting on socks and shoes.
Okay.
The components are identical. But if you sequence it sock, then shoe, the system works. If you sequence it shoe, then sock, it completely fails. The components didn't change at all. The relational sequence did. That is path dependence in action.
Right. Order matters. You can't put a sock over a shoe and expect to walk normally.
And when you impose direct control, when you force a variable from the outside, you violently disrupt this sequence. In mathematics, this is related to the idea that grouping A and B and then applying C gives a fundamentally different result than applying A to the grouping of B and C.
Oh, I see.
When you force a system, you are introducing hidden incompatibilities because you are forcing a sequence that the system hasn't structurally integrated yet.
Let me see if I can map that back to the ICU scenario we talked about earlier. Let's say I administer a vasopressor drug to raise the patient's dropping blood pressure, A, and it acts perfectly on the blood vessels, which is B. That's my local pair working. The pressure number goes up. But because I didn't account for C, the triadic context of the patient's global metabolic demand, I've effectively put the shoe on before the sock.
That is exactly it. You get cross-channel divergence.
Think about how the vasopressor actually raises the blood pressure.
By constricting the blood vessels.
Right. It tightly constricts the blood vessels. So yes, the pressure in the core goes up. The dashboard turns green. But what is happening at the extremities? What is happening in the microvessels of the kidneys or the fingers?
They're clamped shut.
You are clamping them shut. You are literally starving the extreme tissues of oxygen just to paint the central dashboard green. The blood pressure normalizes, but tissue perfusion collapses.
So the local subsystem works perfectly, but it completely fails to integrate globally. The pieces just pull apart.
Yes, that is the physical mechanism of why forcing a system breaks its coherence. You are imposing a localized sequence that contradicts the global structure. You're demanding that the blood pressure look normal, and the body complies by sacrificing its own organs.
Wow. This really highlights a profound blind spot in how we build technology and infrastructure today. We spend all our energy optimizing our systems for local consistency.
We absolutely do.
We make absolutely sure the pump works. We make sure the sensor works. We make sure the drug targets the specific receptor. But we rarely, if ever, design for global coherence across these overlapping triads.
Because we design for maximum efficiency. And efficiency, by definition, strips out the margin.
Yeah, it does.
We remove all the buffers to make things faster and cheaper. And when you have an engineered system with zero margin and a crisis hits and you introduce a forced, localized intervention, the whole thing shatters. There is no slack left in the system to absorb the contradiction between the shoe and the sock.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's synthesize where this leaves us. I am entirely willing to concede that relational coherence and those early warning signals, path dependence, cross-channel divergence, increasing variability, and delayed recovery offer an incredibly profound diagnostic dashboard.
It's revolutionary, really.
They give a clinician, or an engineer, or an economist a much deeper, more mechanistic understanding of systemic health than waiting for state variables to fail. Tracking the margin is clearly superior to just watching the paint.
It shifts you from being reactive to being truly proactive.
It does. However, I still hold that in the messy reality of the real world, acute crises will always require an element of direct variable control. When the system crosses a lethal threshold, the luxury of navigation sometimes just evaporates.
I disagree, but I understand the instinct.
You just have to constrict the blood vessels or flood the market with liquidity to buy the system another hour of life. But I take your point completely. Practitioners must acutely monitor the cost of that control. They have to know that by turning the dial, they are spending the system's margin, and they have to plan for how to replenish it.
And I will maintain that relying on variable control is a trap. It actively breeds the very fragility we are trying to prevent. Every single time you force a dial, you are consuming the exact margin the system needs to survive the next shock.
You see it as a downward spiral?
It is a downward spiral. I believe true viability requires the intellectual humility to abandon the illusion that we can dominate these systems. We must respect the functional triads and practice the rigorous active discipline of coherent navigation. We have to guide systems within viable boundaries by protecting their internal logic, not by overriding it.
Well, we certainly agree that modern systems, from our bodies to our ecologies to our financial markets, are vastly more interdependent than our traditional reductionist monitoring suggests.
Completely.
The old view of just isolating and fixing the broken part is entirely insufficient for the complexity we face today.
Absolutely. We are completely aligned on the diagnosis of the problem. Our fundamental disagreement just lies in the treatment.
Right. We do disagree on that threshold, that exact moment where navigation must give way to control during a catastrophic failure. But I think there is immense, undeniable value in what the book proposes, viewing the world through relations rather than isolated objects. It forces us to ask a totally different set of questions.
It really does.
When the alarm goes off, instead of just asking what is broken, it forces us to ask how has the connection degraded?
And that shift in perspective changes our entire operational approach to the world. It reminds us that we are not standing outside these complex systems, turning dials on a separate machine. We are actively participating in them. Every intervention we make changes the structure of the whole.
There is far more depth to explore in Dr. Saley's source material, especially regarding the specific, practical application of these seven primitives to clinical judgment, ecological stewardship, and infrastructure engineering. We leave it to you, the listener, to form your own conclusion on how best to interact with the complex systems in your own life and work.
Exactly. So the next time you look at a dashboard and see a red light flashing, you might pause for a moment before you instinctively reach for the dial.
You might ask yourself, are you actually saving the system or are you just silencing the alarm? Until next time, keep questioning the variables.